Good morning. The title of the panel today is Market Update, Fuel EU. My name is Alexander Prokopakis. I'm the Executive Director of the International Banking Industry Association. Thank you, Olga, Nicholas, and the Capital Link team for inviting us. Bankers are more relevant to shipping than ever as the industry is facing the challenges transforming into low-carbon fuels. Collaboration across all stakeholders is key to ensuring practical and official transition. At IBIA, our mission is to support the shipping and banking industry in order to comply with ever-changing regulations. FuelEU Maritime is a transformative regulation aimed to steering the shipping industry towards alternative fuels and sustainability. We have today together with us two distinguished guests, Ralph Garn, Managing Director of OceanScore, who brings an extensive experience in credit ratings and sustainability, and Theo Kurbelis, Strategic Partner at Lloyd's Register, a leader in alternative fuels and electrification, who is representative also of IEX at the IMO on greenhouse gas emissions. So, gentlemen, as we don't have a lot of time in our hands, let's get to it. So, what do you see the biggest opportunities and challenges for the maritime industry in complying with FuelEU?
Alexander, thank you very much. Thanks to the Capital Link team for inviting us to speak today. FuelEU Maritime is undoubtedly one of the most hot topics in the maritime industry because it came to complement EU ETS, all as part of the EU Fit for 55 strategy. What is worth mentioning is that in direct contrast to EU ETS, which has a very simple mechanism of working and has a direct aim at reducing greenhouse gas emissions downstream, FuelEU Maritime has a completely different intent. And the intent of the legislator is to promote the uptake of alternative fuels. And this directly means that while vessels failing to comply with a greenhouse gas intensity benchmark set by the regulator will pay penalties, not in EUA allowances this time, but directly in euros. So this is the biggest and first difference. Vessels over-complying or over-achieving the FuelEU target will be granted with compliance surplus units, which can be used in various ways to help achieve compliance in the whole fleet through flexibility mechanisms such as pooling. So this is the first opportunity that FuelEU offers a lot of flexibility mechanisms and incentivizes the uptake of alternative fuels and also gives direct rewards to the first movers. The biggest challenge of FuelEU Maritime is that a simple pay-to-comply strategy does not work. And it does not work due to the very nature of the regulation. Each year that a vessel remains under compliant, unless done something, i.e. enter into a pool, the penalty due to be paid will be multiplied by 10%, and then again next year another 10%. So sooner than later, the penalty will be unbearable. And even if the vessel is into a charter party agreement, we have seen the latest BIMCO clause of FuelEU, these penalty multiplier additional surcharges are not covered. Also, when a vessel is penalized and has a penalty multiplier in her back, if we can say that, this is public information in the Thetis MRV website. So vessels that don't do anything will be less commercially attractive in an unstable and volatile market.
Thank you. You gave us a very good overall picture. Ralph, what do you want to add on the challenges and opportunities?
Yeah, thank you, Alexander. Theo, you already mentioned a few content pieces from the regulation. But what we see in the market, and not only here in Greece, but all over Europe, is that there's a lack of knowledge about FuelEU. So a lot of companies are actually right now trying to understand the regulation and ask themselves, what should I really do? Where do I even start? And it is, in the end, going to be a discussion between the DUC holder, who is responsible for FuelEU, but also the owner and the charterer, because even though there is no polluter pay principle, a lot of market participants view it this way. So the most often recognized strategy is a zero compliance balance strategy, which means that the vessel owner or the operator try to accomplish a zero compliance balance. And by doing that, they consider the routes, the ports, where they can actually bunker biofuels, and they might only have, I don't know, two vessels in a surplus just to balance off the other vessels who have a deficit. But it's important to understand how you actually get to the information, how to generate a surplus with some vessels and be able to offset that with other vessels. And there are some mechanisms that the FuelEU regulation offers, which is, you mentioned it already, is the pooling. So if you have a surplus, you can actually sell your surplus in a pool. The big question is at what price, because there is no regulated price for pools, or if you have a deficit, you can buy from pools. Most companies will probably, in the beginning, create internal pools, so they have a few vessels with a surplus and more vessels with a deficit and pool internally, which means they save basically 650 euros per ton. And if they buy in external pools, the prices might be totally different. We expect in 2025 to have a surplus market, 50% coming from LPG and LNG vessels. So there are so many vessels out there that generate a surplus that 50% of the surplus will come from those vessels, and the remaining 50% will come from biofuels, waste-based biofuels use. The big question is, if the pooling prices are so low that it makes sense to choose the second option, not to sell your surplus, but to bank it, and you can actually bank it until 2050 if you want, just because you think that the market will turn into a deficit market in 2030 when the trajectory goes down by another 4% from today -2 to then -6%, and the deficit market will basically lead to the fact that pool prices will, at the penalty level, which is then 650 euros, so instead of selling your surplus for 150 to 200 today, you will sell it then for 650. There's a big unknown what really happens to the market, and if we truly find a surplus market by the end of this year. So it is a hugely complex regulation. It is very difficult to basically understand all the parameters that influence business decisions. And but as you rightly said, there are opportunities. If you have the right strategy, you can generate sufficient surplus, you can actually sell your surplus, you can actually make money with FuelEU.
Thank you, Ralph. Interesting perspective. And it seems like the financial aspect of it, going down the line, is going to be very important for these decisions. And talking about decisions, how investors' decisions will be saved on alternative fuels, if we're going to go that route, for regulations like this in the market. Do you want to go ahead on that? How investment decisions in alternative fuels will be saved through FuelEU?
So investing decisions being shaped, in the end, one has to look at which vessels will go to which ports, which fuels will be available in which ports, and then basically define whether you will find onshore power in the ports. So you might consider onshore power because it actually really benefits you. On certain routes, wind assisted propulsion makes sense. So it will also benefit you. And then you will basically, go by what's available and make the right decisions on what vessels to, sail on which routes. Theo?
So the answer is very simple. The investment decisions will be saved if this becomes financially viable. And while the pooling option for the alternative fuels gives a significant overcompliance surplus, the surplus, which surplus may be commoditized in a way of paying to enter a pool, this needs to make sense in terms of the total cost of ownership of the asset, because the green fuels today, as we see them, are significantly much more expensive compared to the viable conventional options. So there should be an additional incentive for the uptake of alternative fuels. And you are very glad here that in the agenda there are people that in the forthcoming sessions will further elaborate on that. But EU has issued a series of funding opportunities or financing via grants, green bonds, green financing, which can make investments, alternative fuel investments, viable. What we see as Lloyd's Register by analyzing the market is that the alternative fuel order book is in a boom phase. One in two vessels being ordered is alternative fueled, capable, not ready. So this is going to increase much more and more. And even with IMO introducing midterm measures later in the year, this is going to be more intensified, Alexandre.
And you will come back to the IMO in a second. OceanScore is helping shipping companies simplify the compliance with fuel EU and EU ETS. What does it mean in regards to the challenges and opportunities we just talked about, Ralph?
I mean, basically, what I said in the beginning is that companies are asking themselves, what am I going to do now? And I think the first task that every company has to complete is make sure that you have access to quality data from the vessel. So quality ship to shore, data transfer, data quality improvement, and then have the data validated, vessel-based, by the verifiers. So that's a huge challenge for a lot of companies that, yeah, even support, send handwritten noon reports nowadays. So digitalization, digital transformation of data is really, really important. And the next part is basically reduce your financial exposure and your process exposure, which means, and we heard that from Polis, we need to be able to collect our EUAs, but in the future we also need to be able to collect our funds that we might have negotiated with the charter parties. So on top of EUAs, we will see compliance balances in the future. We have to have processes that track the compliance balances, that are able to credit compliance balance, debit compliance balance, see at all times who owes what, the owner, the charterer, to the manager, which department is involved, the fleet management, the finance department, and make sure that everyone has basically the same view on the processes, on the data, on the deficits, on the compliance balance, on the EUA collected, outstanding, all these things. It's hugely complex, and you cannot do this with Excel anymore. So I think that it's really important to do that, and we basically provide software solutions and a huge service team to help shipping companies do that. And if a shipping company decides to do that, they can even outsource the complete ETS and the complete fuel EU process to OceanScore.
You mentioned Polis, and we're going to go back to what Theo said about IMO fueling UTS, our regional regulations. How this is aligned, I'm turning now to your Ajax hat, how this is compliant with the global IMO regulations, and is it aligned?
Fuel EU and EU ETS are the implementing vehicles of EU's strategy for decarbonization, which is the Fit for 55 strategy. So EU has set specific goals about the Union strategy, while IMO has implemented their own strategy back in 2023. June 2023, IMO said that by or close to 2050, we would need to go to net zero emissions compared to 2008 levels. Net zero means well-to-wake approach, so upstream emissions from shipping fuels will also count. In terms of mechanism, IMO is going to discuss their net zero framework on April, first week of April, to decide on the net zero strategy. And most probably, the midterm measures will comply of an economic element, namely a greenhouse gas pricing mechanism in a form of a levy or a contribution, which is still under discussion, and of a global marine fuel standard. The global marine fuel standard, on its shape or general appearance, will look like Fuel EU. However, from the proposals that we are seeing from various member states, it would be much more ambitious. I wouldn't say definitely that there is an issue of alignment, because EU, depending on what IMO decides, may see that the IMO decision will also encompass their own strategy. It is very interesting to see on what IMO will decide on the first step, how this aligns to the strategy of the EU, and then how EU in the next years, 2027, will review their own strategy and see how the Fuel EU Maritime and EU ETS will continue.
Going back to financing a little bit, Ralph, you have 20 years of experience. How do you see the financial mechanism like sustainability ratings support compliance?
So the financial industry has a lot of regulations. There's, for instance, ECB expects that banks integrate an ESG risk framework into their risk management decisions. Then there's the Capital Requirement Directive that also looks at ESG risk. There's the disclosure requirements. Philipp Wünschmann actually has a product that is offering light green finance, which is Article 8 of the Sustainable Finance Directive. Then there is one regulation that will not only affect banks, but every single company, not only shipping companies, that's out there, which is the CSRD, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, coming into regulation this year for listed companies, but from 27 on, basically for all companies. That's going to be the biggest regulation upcoming, also for banks. And taxonomy, we have heard that, sustainable green lending. I could keep going on, but you know, the message is there are lots of regulations that banks have to meet, and they all have to do with making transparent the ESG proportion of lending that they do. And the latest discussion is to even increase capital charges for banks if they don't have sufficient climate-related lending in their portfolios. So that will hugely affect all industries, shipping especially, because it does not only affect the banks, it also affects other lenders. And one comment on this morning, we heard that we need more alternative fuels, and we don't have sufficient alternative fuels. I think it's not really about alternative fuels. It's about alternative energy. It's not fuels, it's energy. And there is a good example, like if you look back, the biggest things that happened in the past was when electricity was invented, then the internet came, changed everything. You probably had also a BlackBerry where you were typing. Nobody could imagine a phone without keys. So the iPhone came. Now we have AI, and AI will revolutionize everything we can think of. And there is a good example of a guy. So human capabilities and AI will change the world. And
thank you, Ralph. I think
just
Nicholas
one more. Just one more.
There's, kick
there's,
us down.
There's Tesla, SpaceX, OpenAI, Starlink that a lot of you use, and the vision travel to Mars. So who's behind all that? The name was already named Elon Musk. So what do you think if I ask you the question 10 years from now? Do you think we will go to Mars or human will go to Mars? Who thinks it is possible? Who think this will, at some point when we sit here, maybe 10, 15 years, we will go to Mars? Just raise your hands if you think it can be possible. I think it will be. So we have a rather pessimistic crowd here. Let's see. I'd like to come back 15 years from now, and this is basically my last word.
Nikos,
let's see if we can
make a note on that to invite him 15 years from now.
Not with a vessel, but with a ship, with a spaceship.
We can be discussing with this topic for hours. I have been told to Nicholas a long time ago that this is going to be a hot topic, and at least for the next decade. So thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you all.